Welcome to Whitley on Wine with your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist Robert Whitley.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me. Don't try to fool me, bejewel me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry, peel me a grape.
Welcome and thank you for listening. I'm joined today by Gerald Boyd, a colleague at Wine Review Online and former editor of the Wine Spectator, and Dr. Michael Epstein, also a colleague from WineReviewOnline.com. And welcome, guys. How are you?
I'm fine, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent.
Things are good here in Boston.
So, okay, so you got to fix on the two voices. I invited Gerald and Michael today because we want to honor the passing of Robert Mondavi, who died last week at the age of 94. And of course, you know, unless you've been in a cave for the last 30 or 40 years, you know that Robert Mondavi is one of the great pioneers of California wine and one of the great vintners of the world for the past, well, I guess since he opened his winery in the mid-1960s. So, you know, I would imagine, Gerald, since you go back a little further as a, you know, wine authority and wine columnist and wine writer, wine journalist than either Michael or I, you go pretty far back with Robert, don't you?
Yes, in fact, I do. And I was just thinking about that recently when the news came about Mr. Mondavi's passing. And I actually go back probably to the very early days when I first started into writing about wine in the early 1970s.
Yeah, and, you know, he was just getting started then.
He was.
Well, I mean, with his winery. He had been with Krug for years.
Right. But his winery, he had just started that, opened it in 1966. And I remember at that time that what a, you know, what a controversial piece it was, and it was striking architecture compared to everything else that was around in the valley at that time.
Now, what was it about Robert Mondavi, though, that made him so special? That why do people revere him the way they do? What was it about those early years that you can remember that really kind of set Robert Mondavi apart from everyone else?
Well, I think in wine terms, certainly he it was his generous spirit that really endeared him to most people. He was maybe not the easiest guy to deal with because he had this idea of what he wanted to do and how he wanted to promote, particularly California wine at that time, which definitely needed to be promoted. But people, he never hesitated to give what he had and share things with people and educate people about wine.
He was very single-minded in his passion for the principle that California wine could be as good as any wine in the world, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He surely was. He's, I mean, far and away the ambassador of California wine. I can't think of anybody that promoted the concept of California wine more than Robert Mondavi.
Michael, what are your earliest memories of Mondavi?
That, in fact, is my earliest memory of Mr. Mondavi. His passion about California wine, not his wine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he kept telling me, he said, with this, some people would think of it as an arrogance, but me, it was to me, it was a confidence and a recognition of what the problem was at the time. He said, I have to convince people to drink California wine. The unsaid was, once they drink California wines, my wines will look very good to them, so I don't even have to promote my wines.
Mm-hmm.
The hump I have to get over is to make people, to convince people to drink wines from California. And I think he was correct. I mean, after all, this was 10 years before he opened his winery in '66. 10 years before that famous Judgment of Paris wine tasting, he was struggling at the time when California wine was considered terrible and jug wine, no such thing as premium wine. And so the battle he was fighting was not recognition for the Robert Mondavi Winery. The battle he was fighting, which I think people forget about, was how do I convince people to drink California wine?
Yeah.
And I think that's his one of his two greatest contributions, is that he was really a locomotive for that region.
Yeah, and I would add, though, that you know, he was very famous for meeting with people and having them order whatever they wanted off the wine list and putting down a bottle of his Cabernet Sauvignon and opening both bottles and, you know, just proving that maybe it's not better, but at least it belongs. It's in the same league with these other wines. You know, order the best French wine you can find on the list. Forget what the price is. And, of course, you know, we should say the prices weren't back then weren't nearly what they are today. So, you know, if you did that today, I think it would cost you a small fortune.
Yeah, it sure would.
And I would echo what Jerry said about his generous nature. I mean, he was a great mentor. If you go down the list of current winemakers in California at good places, most all of them passed through the Robert Mondavi Winery.
And a bunch of them, you know, Zelma Long was there.
Right.
After they left,
he didn't view them as competitors. Mm-hmm. If you had problems, you'd call him up, from what I've heard, and he would try to help. And I think that's certainly not what happens in Burgundy and Bordeaux. People aren't sharing their secrets.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, he did have this this generous nature that you know, that allowed him. He was a competitor, but he was also a person who was willing to help in any way that he could, especially if it meant getting the message out and you know, getting more people interested in California wine, and then, of course, in Mondavi wines.
Well, you know, one thing that I remember, you know, I first started writing about wine in 1991, and I would run into people in the California wine industry, and they would tell Mondavi stories. And especially some of the old-timers would always talk about, you know, sales trips. They'd go back east. They'd go to New York, Boston, Washington, D.C. And it was so frustrating for them because every time they went someplace, Robert Mondavi had already been there. He outworked everyone.
He was everywhere.
Yeah, he was apparently tireless.
Yeah, he definitely was tireless.
You know, and I remember just a few years ago, maybe 12 years ago, seeing him boogie into the wee hours of the morning at the Napa Valley Wine Auction. You know, I mean, the guy had a lot of energy.
He did.
Anyway, we will continue with our discussion of the late Robert Mondavi following these messages.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice. Skin me a peach, save the fuzz. Peel me a grape.
And now, back to Whitley on Wine.
Slowly.
With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
I'm chatting with colleagues Gerald Boyd and Michael Epstein, columnist at Wine Review Online, and we're discussing the late Robert Mondavi and sharing some stories and some memories. And guys, I'd like to pose something. You know, we know how focused and proud Robert Mondavi was on California wine, and especially the Napa Valley. I mean, you know, you could argue that he built the Napa Valley brand, or at least gave it a real nice push along the road to success. Yet he was also a person who built bridges, you know, with vintners in other parts of the world. You know, he had the partnership with Baron Rothschild, and they did Opus One. He had the partnership with the Frescobaldis. He was a great inspiration for Dennis Organ at Lewin Estate. Does it surprise you that someone who was so really focused on what he was doing here in California also had such a global reach?
Well, Robert, I think that he epitomized the American entrepreneurial spirit. There are plenty of stories circulating around about how he formed a lot of these alliances, but him standing at the foot of the bed with Baron Rothschild while the Baron was doing business from his bed, and they were negotiating on what grapes they were going to use for Opus One, and then later at the groundbreaking ceremony in the Napa Valley for Opus One, him persuading the Baroness Rothschild to put on rubber boots and jump down into the hole with a shovel so they could have their photo taken. It was him all the way. Yeah. It was Robert Mondavi that really persuaded these people through his desire to form these alliances.
Now, what do you think? Opus One was the strongest one. Now they don't, you know, the Mondavi Winery no longer has the association with Frescobaldi, and their alliance in Chile went by the wayside with the sale of the winery. But would you say that Opus One was his most successful venture where he reached out?
Yeah, I would certainly say so. As far as you know, people looking at California wine, the interesting thing to me is that I don't really see Opus One as being associated with Mondavi anymore.
Not anymore, but in the beginning.
It's a separate brand unto itself.
And it was a big deal. Were you with the Spectator at the time? Because I know the Spectator wrote a lot about it.
No, I was not.
Yeah.
Not at that time, I wasn't.
What about you, Michael?
I think Opus One was his proudest accomplishment other than his own winery, because all the other alliances were outside of California, but this was bringing arguably the most famous French winemaker to California, and I think it was his way of saying, see, California is really as good as anybody else because we can have Baron Rothschild investing here and making wine here, and that gives us the stamp of approval.
Yeah.
And I think he probably felt proudest about accomplishing that.
Although, you know, we shouldn't give short shrift to Luce, which was the partnership with...
Right.
With Frescobaldi, because, you know, all of us travel extensively, and we spend quite a bit of time in Italy. And you can't go to a good restaurant, you can't go to a serious wine bar without seeing Luce around. I mean, it really has become one of the icons in Italian wine. So,
oh, there's no question about that. And, I always wonder, I never had a chance to ask him about this, whether the inward motivation was to have some connection to the origin of his family from Italy. And that's why he wanted to have this alliance with Frescobaldi.
Yeah.
You know, to this day, the Robert Mondavi Reserve Cabernet is one of the iconic red wines in America, maybe even in the world, and it sells for quite a few shekels. It's not inexpensive, but Mondavi also had his name on a lot of other brands. Do you think that in any way diminished his record of accomplishments, that his name was on Woodbridge, which makes very fine wines, but it's not in that league with Mondavi Reserve Cabernet, obviously, and some of the other brands? Do you think that in any way diminishes his legacy?
Personally, I don't think that it diminishes his legacy because people who know what the contributions that were done by Robert Mondavi will always remember it in that regard, and that's where his place in history, in wine history, is going to come in. But I don't think that you can discount the fact that any time that a company starts to perceivably overextend themselves by putting their name on too many different brands, that could possibly dilute something.
Yeah, I would have preferred that they had other names for those products,
right,
which were very fine. But I, you know, just to have Mondavi as a kind of a standalone brand, and it's only Mondavi, and you know, Michael, I know you've kind of discussed this with me on the radio many times, talking about the you know, reserve and non-reserve. You know, you go to a chateau in Bordeaux, and whatever the wine is, that's what it is. There's no like, okay, then we also have our reserve over here. So, you know, I kind of feel the same way about the Mondavi name on the bottle. My feeling is it would be great if the Mondavi name only appeared on the wine that comes from the winery in Oakville, the Robert Mondavi Winery.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other notable things that Mondavi did at that winery was he was among the first to have this district collection of wines that actually highlighted the various subregions of the Napa Valley and demonstrate to people again the uniqueness of Napa and the greatness of the wines that can come out of there by saying, look, it's not all the same. It's not all one area.
Yeah.
We can keep the winemaker constant and get grapes from different areas and make different wines. And I thought that was kind of another step that he was taking to explain to people about Napa.
You know, go ahead, Jerry.
You know, guys, I can tell you, though, that when we gave the Wine Industry Integrity Award to Robert Mondavia a couple of years back, it's a program that I'm involved in, it was done at Lodi, and we've never packed the hall with as many people to see someone get this award as we did with Robert Mondavi. And it was like, you know, the native son coming home.
Mm-hmm.
The place just absolutely erupted in applause and recognition for Mondavi, even though he is more identified with Napa Valley.
Sure, sure. But, you know, there's no question that people throughout the industry admire and love the man. Is there anyone that you can think of who would even approach his magnitude of accomplishments?
No.
Yeah, I was scratching my head
the Gallo brothers did a lot for California wine, and they're the whole family, and Andrei Chelichev has done a lot for the quality of California wines. But
on a global scale, I don't
think Mondavi did it all. He did what the Gallos did and what Chelichev did and more.
Right.
I can't think of any one person who comes close.
I agree. I think that that's a good point, though. Robert, you mentioned on a global scale, and that's really the key to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is the most influential person. And for those of us, you had mentioned earlier that we travel a lot, if you go around the world in wine circles, and Mondavi's name is known and respected no matter where you go.
Oh, yeah, and you know, one of the first things somebody wants to tell you is, oh, I met Robert Mondavi once.
Right.
They don't say, I met Joe Heitz. And I love Joe Heitz. I love the Heitz wines. And they don't say, you know, I met Warren Winarski. They say, no, I met Robert Mondavi.
Yeah.
And then they have some great story to tell. And usually it involves his generosity.
Yes.
You know, his generosity of spirit or helping them with something or giving them advice. I mean, you know, his reputation in that respect is just impeccable.
Right.
The fascinating thing to me about his wines is I've been tasting his older reserves over the last few days since he died, just kind of as a memory of him. And
I don't know, Jerry. How do you feel about not being invited to that tasting?
There's not a tasting. It was dinner. It was a drinking.
Well, we
still would have been there, Michael.
And, you know, it was the 85, the 91, the 92. Mm-hmm. These are wonderfully balanced wines. The 91 and 92 are still not evolved entirely. And you go back and you look at the alcohol levels on them, and they're 12.5% and 13.5%.
Yeah, isn't that
alcohol.
Amazing?
And they're balanced, and they're delicious to drink. And it reminds you that you can make complex, balanced, delightful wines without having 15% alcohol.
Yeah.
Amen.
Amen. And you know, but you're getting us into another topic, which we'll have to take up at some point in the future. You know, and
good idea.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I think one of the reasons we're getting the higher sugars and higher alcohols now is just they have healthier vines and they make more sugar. The old vines were virused and diseased, and, you know, he had great vineyards. He had that great Tokalon vineyard. But I bet you if you went there in the fall, you know, during harvest, you saw all the, you know, certain colors indicate certain viruses. I bet you had a lot of kind of vines that were struggling to get those grapes ripe, and then you waited till the right moment, and you made a Robert Mondavi Reserve Cabernet.
Well, maybe that's a good thing. I mean,
I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, and I just auctioned off a 5-liter bottle of Silverado Vineyards Reserve Cabernet from the 1991 vintage. I auctioned it off at a charity fundraiser last week, and I looked at the alcohol, 13%.
Yeah.
You know, a Reserve Napa Valley Cabernet today has got to be well over 14,
well
close
over.
To 15. Yeah.
Yep.
But, you know, Mondavi was a leader in a lot of ways. You know, his Chardonnays were great. He, you know, Jerry, why don't you tell about the story about how he created the Fumé Blanc in California? We just have a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, well, that in itself, I think, is a very interesting story. Here's a man who was traveling extensively in France and was tasting Sauvignon Blanc wines there from the Loire Valley in particular and really liked them, realizing that he was not able to sell his own Sauvignon Blanc because of the name of the variety, came back and applied the Puy Fumé from the upper Loire and just changed it around a little bit and called it Fumé Blanc, and sales took off, and no one has been looking back since.
Now, he did put it in wood, but he didn't make it an oaky wine.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Although I think in its history that it has gone from a wine not terribly oaky to oaky and then back again.
Yeah, well, I think we've seen that evolution throughout California. You know, and Robert encompassed all of those phases. You know, he was there when, you know, I bet you when he opened his winery, there weren't 30 wineries in the Napa Valley.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
You know, I mean, who was the big gun when the Mondavi Winery opened?
Probably Heights and Behringer.
Right.
That would be my...
NPV.
Beaulieu.
Oh, yeah, Beaulieu.
Beaulieu may have been.
And Inglenook as well.
Yeah.
We're going to sit here.
but beyond that, there really wasn't much.
No, that's true. They were all the large historic wineries.
You know, Winarski's Stag's Leap didn't start till the 70s.
Right.
Montalena was, 70? So when Robert opened his winery, he was, first of all, he was striking out on his own, and that was just his nature. But it was no slam dunk that you were going to, you know, make millions of dollars in the wine business in California in 1966.
Well, it was the first new winery, I think, in 30-some years in the Valley.
Wow. You know, I didn't know that. But I was out of junior high. I was in high school at the time in Maryland, so I knew very little about California wine. And I think that really speaks to the point of what Robert Mondavi did, because I was originally from the East Coast. Michael is on the East Coast. We all know that at one point, you know, we knew nothing about California wines, and now they're everywhere, and we owe that to Robert Mondavi. Guys, we're out of time. You hear the music coming up. I want to thank you for joining me. I want to thank you for sharing your memories of Robert Mondavi. And this is Robert Whitley for Whitley on Wine, saying until next week, ciao.
Talk to me nice. Talk to me nice. You've got to wine.